Hello and welcome to At the Letters, February the 19th, 2025. Ben Nicholson-Smith here with you alongside Arden Swelling. Thank you to our producers, Christian Ryan and Nick Andrade. Thanks for listening, even though you probably know by now this is not the episode that Blue Jays fans wanted to hear, that's for sure. But before we get to that, Arden, how's it going for you today?
Not bad, man. How are you?
Pretty good. Just still kind of dealing with a bunch of Vlad Jr. fallout. Yesterday was pretty busy between various, you know, appearances and writing and just trying to make sense of all this. So I guess super big picture, or you can zone in on something specific if you want. We haven't really, you know, discussed this at all before hopping onto this podcast here. But what do you make of what happened Monday and then heading into early Tuesday when it was revealed that the Blue Jays have not, in fact, extended Vlad Guerrero Jr.?
Yeah, you and I haven't chatted since this all kind of came down. So I'm very interested to hear your perspective on it. Just staying like as broad as possible before we dive in on the particulars. Like, my most general reaction is that this is a very disappointing outcome for all involved, every stakeholder involved. And so that's Vlad, that's his reps, that's the Blue Jays, their front office, their ownership, the players on their team, their fans. Like, nobody comes away from Tuesday feeling rosy or sunny or good or optimistic. Like, it's just a very disappointing day for all things Blue Jays. Vlad's a homegrown star. He's an incredible hitter, one of the best in the sport, someone who has a deep connection with the fan base, with the country of Canada, with the game of baseball itself, through his father, obviously. This is exactly the kind of player that you want to build rosters around, and the Blue Jays don't have an obvious backfill internally for his elite level of carrying production. To not find a way to keep him in Toronto long term is a very disappointing outcome. That's my most broad and general take.
Yeah, I like that broad take. I'm actually even going to go broader here. And before we get into some of the details potentially around Vlad Jr., but for me, when I look at the fallout from this and the aftermath of the non-deal, I just look at this franchise right now and I don't see a lot of direction. I don't see a lot of clarity as far as what the direction is. Now, one player in baseball, we all know one player does not solve that. One player does not, you know, make your team good. Shohei Ohtani and Mike Trout and the Angels obviously prove that. But Bo Bichette on the brink of free agency, Vlad Jr. on the brink of free agency. They do have some players, but, you know, there's not a superstar player here for a long time, nor is there a prospect bubbling up the way Bo and Vlad were 6 years ago this time. So the farm system is not good. By the public rankings, ESPN, The Athletic, MLB.com, Baseball America, they put it in the bottom third. So it's not like the farm system is coming to save things. And then you look at the leadership level. Mark Shapiro's contract is up after this season. Ross Atkins' contract is up the season after that. So it's just unclear who is going to be making the decisions here. Does Mark Shapiro plan to stay? Is Ross Atkins going to be here? What does that mean for the team on the field? What is their direction? Do they plan to do a reset? They certainly don't have that cornerstone player to build around. They talk as though they expect to be competitive. And there are certainly pathways for that to happen with or without any one individual player. But when I look at this team, this franchise, there is less direction here than I've seen in a long time. Like, it is really unclear and to me kind of uncomfortable what the next steps are.
Definitely. Now, do you think that there is something to be said for the flexibility that that allows the Blue Jays in not being too concrete and too locked in to one direction? You know, I think, like, put Shapiro, Atkins, Schneider aside, because that stuff will sort itself out. That stuff's like very easy to deal with. Either they're going to be here long term, either they're going to be extended or they're not. Like, just purely on the roster, the fact that the Blue Jays don't have very many long-term substantial commitments, the fact that there's a ton of money coming off the books after this year and after next, the fact that they have pieces that they could move this year if things went pear-shaped, and they could tear down and pivot at the trade deadline and help replenish their farm system in the process. Or if they're sneaky good this year, they could continue to add and they could continue to supplement and kind of reinforce the roster. Like, do you think that there is actually a little bit of a benefit to having that adaptability, that flexibility built in?
I think it's a silver lining. It's definitely preferable to having bad contracts on the books or having a team that doesn't spend at all. And yeah, the fact that the Blue Jays maybe don't have those commitments and they are a team that's proven themselves willing to spend past the CBT, that gives them a lot of options. Now, at the same time, I think that it's even more preferable if you have a franchise player, even if that franchise player is making top of the market money. If you have that guy, or ideally multiple players like that, and you're building around them, that's even better. And I don't think that the Dodgers are regretting spending that money on Shohei Ohtani. I don't think the Padres regret spending that money on Fernando Tatis. There are a lot of mega deals out there that are good and that ultimately benefit the front office, benefit the team on the field, the franchise values. And that's where I thought this was going to go with Vlad Jr. And there was obviously never a guarantee. Nothing was ever going to be done until it was done. And clearly, we've learned in the last 48 hours that Vlad Jr., you know, he ultimately was comfortable hitting free agency. Maybe he was comfortable all along hitting free agency. But I think the Blue Jays as a franchise would be better off with him locked up. And that was kind of the thesis of last week was, hey, can they find a way to get this done? We don't know, or at least I don't know what the final ask was from Vlad Jr. or what the final offer was from the Blue Jays. But I think they would be better off having him locked in for $40 million a year for the next decade.
Yeah, of course, having certainty with Vlad long-term would be better. But, you know, you mentioned last week, like the Blue Jays are in the same position today as they were in last week. And we weren't saying any of these things last week.
I just don't know about that because last week
changed.
Well, last week they still had the chance to extend him.
Today they still have the chance to extend him as well. They know his price. They can meet at any time.
I don't think they do have the chance to extend him anymore. I think that ship has sailed.
You don't think that if they came to him and said, okay, this is what you wanted, here it is, you don't think he would sign?
I don't think they're going to do that.
I agree. But they still have the chance. By definition, they still have that opportunity. I don't think it's likely. But I just don't think, like, things haven't changed. And, like, the Blue Jays are in the same position today as they were in last week. Because, look, last week, Vlad still wasn't going to sign for what they were offering. Just like a month ago or a year ago, he wasn't going to sign for what they were willing to offer. So to me, like, the circumstances are exactly the same.
Yeah, I think that having that chance to have those discussions, having that chance to find common ground and to bridge that gap, there's value in that. And I think that that value, however you quantify it, has kind of disappeared right now. I mean, there's having that window, that exclusive window, when the Yankees aren't getting in there, when Steve Cohen isn't flying Vladdy to a mansion on Long Island or whatever the case, like, this was the Blue Jays' chance to do it when it was just them. And I, you know, technically, could they offer him a monster deal at the All-Star break? Yeah, but at that point, he's 2 months away from free agency. I think he's reaching free agency. Like, I think at this point, Vladdy's hitting the open market. He's going to take a meeting with Steve Cohen. He's going to take a meeting with Hal Steinbrenner. He's going to, you know, visit the Red Sox at Fenway Park if they invite him. I think those things are going to happen. And all of this, in my mind, makes it less likely than this time last week that he ends up playing for the Blue Jays for his prime seasons.
I just, yeah, my point would be that likelihood was equally low a week ago. You know, all that has happened now is that the two sides have exchanged positions and perspectives and realized, yeah, we are far apart just as we were a week ago. And I don't know if you heard Steve Cohen's comments on Tuesday, but he is preaching austerity all of a sudden. Vlad might have to take merely a business class flight to the island where they are going to be negotiating over Mai Tais. Look, I agree with you that I would put overwhelming odds on Vlad going to free agency. It's not a certainty because nothing is a certainty, but I do think it is very likely.
I'd say real quick, just 98%.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't thought about a percentage on it. But, like, to me, nothing is ever 100%, but I do think that it is very strong odds because it is very difficult to envision a pathway for these two sides to come back around prior to free agency. Like, I'm being, obviously, like, I'm playing devil's advocate here because, look, like, technically, yes, neither side has closed any doors, quote, right? Like, both sides could come back around at the end of spring training or at the All-Star break, right? Like, the Blue Jays could coalesce and just say, all right, yep, just have whatever you want. I don't think it's realistic because even if Vlad's side wanted to say, oh, yeah, we had a change of heart, we'll actually just, you know, take your deal now, or we'll actually come closer to the middle now. I mean, who starts that conversation? Who budges first? You know, whoever's doing that is sacrificing quite a bit of power in a negotiation. So I don't really see either side wanting to initiate a resumption of negotiating. And then once the season starts, say Vlad gets out to a hot start over the first half. Well, now the price has only gone up and the incentive for him to realize his full value on the open market has also increased. So can't see a deal getting done there. And then also, like, alternatively, what if Vlad gets off to like a so-so start, you know, and over the first 3 months, it's just kind of ho-hum. Well, now the Jays offer goes down. Now they're certainly not exceeding their value, as they say that they did in this negotiation this week. And so in that situation, I assume Vlad would still, you know, presumably believe he's worth a lot. So there's no pathway to a deal there. So it's just hard to realistically envision a pathway for these two sides to come back around prior to free agency.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's hitting the open market. And this is where it's tough, because when the Blue Jays, like, the Blue Jays have signed some very good players, and again, they do spend money. They've signed their Kevin Gausmans, they've signed their George Springers.
This is a well-hit ball towards the right field corner, and it's gone! Right around the pesky pole into the seats down the right field line, it's a three-run homer for George Springer.
But they have never completed a mega deal. Like, in the scope of free agent contracts and the scope of major contracts in this sport, the Blue Jays are actually very much on the low end of that. The only teams that have never spent as much as the Blue Jays are the A's, Cardinals, Guardians, Pirates, and White Sox. Like, every other team in baseball has a contract on the books for $150 million or more at some point in their franchise history. So the Jays, when it comes to actually completing these mega deals, yeah, they'll bid. I mean, they'll bid on anyone. They'll probably bid on Kyle Tucker when he's a free agent. They'll bid on Vladdy when he's a free agent. We saw it with Corbin Burns and Juan Soto and Shohei Ohtani, and that's good. It's a good idea to bid on those players. I'm not saying otherwise, but we have not seen them bid to the point of making great offers. They've made very good offers, certainly respectable offers, and again, it's way better that they're making those offers than not, but really, it's binary. And Mark Shapiro said this, and on this point, I couldn't agree more. You either get the player or you don't. You either get the deal done or you don't. So in that territory, the Blue Jays have found themselves in the not getting it done category. And I just think when you throw the Yankees, a motivated Yankees team, or whoever it is, the Giants, the Cubs, the Tigers, the Red Sox, when you're competing in that environment and Vlad Jr. has already had one, you know, negotiation sputter with you, I think it's going to be really tough. And I think that they're going to be fighting uphill. And their track record doesn't necessarily paint a picture of a front office that closes those deals when it's crunch time.
Here's where it's hard for me to cast judgment on this. Like, we are absent some very fundamental information to this situation. And that is, what was offered by the Blue Jays? What was proposed by Guerrero's side? And how much either party moved towards the middle? And then even beyond that, you know, who moved further? Who was open-minded or closed-minded to structural elements like deferrals or opt-outs or bonuses? Like, I can't really pass judgment on the Blue Jays and say that they are at fault for this negotiation not producing a deal without that information. Like, absent that information, I just don't know. If the Blue Jays were significantly underbidding, like if they were significantly lowballing, then yes, that is like absolutely on them that this didn't get done. If there was no historical comparable for what they were offering, if they weren't factoring in inflation, if they weren't, if they didn't have a reasonable value, then certainly it's their fault, just as it would be Vlad's fault if he didn't have a reasonable value. Like, if he was seeking what David Ortiz proposed, $585 million, like, I just think that the context and the nuance in those numbers tell the entire story, and we completely lack that information. So it's just so hard to really assign blame here for why this didn't produce a deal.
I agree that those variables are so important to this. And at some point, one assumes that that information will leak out. Even when it does, the deferral question is really central to this. you know, my understanding of any recent talks is deferrals are a big question, right? And it really does impact the total value of the deal and the AAV. So even if there's a number that flashes, let's say 500, well, is that 500 with deferrals or 500 without? So we don't know some really important information here. I would say, though, that we also do know some really important information. And I am comfortable saying that the Blue Jays missed a huge opportunity here, even if Vladdy was asking for a huge amount, because this wasn't the only juncture at which the Blue Jays were attempting to extend Vlad Jr. They have had many chances to do this, and they have tried to do this with obviously no success at previous points in their relationship with him. And so this is where I am comfortable saying that the Blue Jays have missed a critical chance, have missed a critical opportunity to extend him, because if you weren't going to be able to get something done at this point when he's a year from free agency, then maybe that should have made them more motivated 3 years ago to get something done after 2021 or after 2022. And they were comfortable waiting because they said, hey, we're a big market team. We can wait. We can spend at top of the market if that's what it takes. And still, that is possible. They could do that in free agency this coming offseason. And he could still be a Blue Jay for life, technically speaking. But I think that their best chance, you know, clearly, whether it was this week or whether it was in October before Soto signed or whether it was a couple years ago, they've had chances to extend him. They have not extended him. So we don't know exactly the specifics, but I think we can definitively say that they have failed to come up with a creative solution to extend a generational player who could be, and I would say should be, the foundation of this team moving forward.
So reportedly, after 2021, the offer made to Vlad was 7 years, $150 million. And to me, that, so like basically you're buying out the four arb years at 70 million, which is what, you know, that's what they ended up being, 70 million. And then you get the three free agent years beyond that for 80, 150 minus 70 for $80 million, right? So, and then Vlad would hit free agency still prior to 30, and he would have $150 million in his back pocket. And to me, like that deal after 21, when Vlad's value was at a high, by the way, the Blue Jays weren't making this deal coming off of like a low year for Vlad, trying to buy low on him. They were trying to buy high. That's comparable to the Bregman extension at 5-100. That's comparable to the Yordan Alvarez extension at 6-115. I mean, the Blue Jays going to 7-150, I think, was honestly a fair offer at that time. Didn't get a deal done, but I think it was a fair offer.
Well, okay, and I don't disagree with you, but at a certain point, like, do you want to lead the league in fair offers, or do you want to have a player on your team that you can build around?
I think the Blue Jays want to make very responsible and disciplined and pragmatic decisions. That's what I think. You can agree or disagree, but that's what I think.
I totally agree with your description. I think that that's an accurate description. And it was telling, even hearing Mark Shapiro say yesterday on Tuesday, that the Blue Jays went beyond their valuation. That this is, and he's pointing out, we actually went beyond. And on the one hand, okay, that's good. That's what you should be doing. On the other hand, in select circumstances to account for broader factors. On the other hand, that's presented as something very, very notable if it's a departure from the norm. And I think there's so much value in these models. I think there's so much value in looking at the data and what's likely to occur. But again, it's binary. It's do you have the player or do you not have the player? And so, and right now, the Jays don't have the player. So beyond 2025. And that's it at the end of the day. Like, it's, you don't get bonus points for doing it for $38 million a year as opposed to 43. I'm making those numbers up. But at a certain point, you need someone who can do damage in the biggest moments. And Vladdy's one of those guys who can do it.
But by sticking to that type of decision making, and again, everyone's going to just assume that I'm like defending the front office. I'm just, this isn't an interesting podcast if you and I just agree on everything.
No, I agree.
Bash Ross Atkins for 45 minutes, right? So you can find that product out there, you know, that's out there. I want you and I to have a discussion where we actually analyze both sides of what is actually a very complicated issue.
Exactly, because you know we could release a second podcast of At the Letters where we just like scream for 15 right. minutes, and you know just release that where like progressively we just get angrier and angrier. It's not really that interesting. I think I would get bored of myself pretty fast. So I'm glad that you're taking a different perspective here.
And there's no shortage of that style of analysis and commentary out there. So you can find that in abundance. So I would say that like the benefit of this style of probabilistic, realistic, pragmatic, model-based, data-driven, objective decision-making is that you don't end up with the downside, which is also present in Vladimir Guerrero Jr. I agree with you. The upside is tremendous, right? Like MVP level production, a carrying player, one of the top 10 performers in the sport. We have to also acknowledge that there is downside here, and that we have seen that downside in 2023 and in 2022. And we have more broadly seen the downside in overextending yourself in a free agent contract, particularly for like a first baseman bat only player, and experiencing like a Ryan Howard outcome or a Prince Fielder outcome or a Chris Davis outcome or an Anthony Rendon outcome, and having this albatross on the books for a decade. This way of making decisions avoids ending up with one of those deals, like really just weighing down your roster flexibility and payroll flexibility and maneuverability going forward, while admittedly, granted, it doesn't give you the best possible chance of getting a deal done and potentially having the upside of Vlad on your roster for that long if he does become a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think you have to accept a little downside to get that upside. Like if you're shopping for a premium good, you're going to pay a premium price. Normally, you're not getting an Hermes scarf on discount. Not that I, you know, shop in those aisles of the department store. But yeah, it's if you're paying for a premium player, you shouldn't expect that he's necessarily this close to free agency going to give you like a huge sort of discount here. And the difference to me between a Ryan Howard and a Chris Davis and Vladdy, well, there are actually two differences. One is age. That's central to this. The fact that he is so young, 25 years old, turning 26 next month. Those guys, by the time that they were signing their free agent deal, same with Pete Alonso, they're so much older. So that's 5 years of their prime. Vladdy, because he's so good, he was in the majors at the time that Aaron Judge was like, you know, swinging and missing at Somerset. You know, like he made it to the majors at such a young age. And yes, he had some up and down years, but at this point in other players' careers, they were just getting started. So I think that's one part of it. And in the case of Ryan Howard and Chris Davis, we don't have the bat speed metrics for that time. We don't have the exit velo metrics, but they were not the kind of complete hitters that Vlad Jr. is from a power standpoint, but also from a knowledge of the strike zone standpoint, also from a bat to ball standpoint. So I think that his offensive profiles, when you look at a guy who swings the bat as hard as he does, who gets the ball in the air and who doesn't chase, I mean, he's chased at points in his career, but he's gotten a lot better at that. This is an elite, elite hitter. He's one of the best in the game.
This one sent to deep center field. It is gone. And he just keeps on swinging it. Another home run for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. And it's got the
I don't see the fielder comp, I think, is actually a good one. I think the fielder comp is the downside comp because fielder got hurt. But I don't see Vladdy as having quite the same risk. And so if you got to pay a huge price to do it, if the Jays had signed him and it was a huge number, I don't think I'd be sitting here today saying that's a bad idea.
How do you explain 2022 and 2023 then, when he was merely a very good player and not an elite player?
I'd say that he was still producing in the major leagues at an age where a lot of players are at AA and AAA. And Vladdy, was he dominating the major leagues? No, but he was contributing at the major leagues at an age that, you know, he's still so young that, you know, there are guys on the top 100 prospect list, like Kumar Rocker, who's older than Vladdy. Like he is still so young that the struggles that we've seen in the major leagues have just come at an age that a lot of players are still developing.
So I would take Pete Alonso as an example from this winter of the kind of player who could produce similarly to Vladimir Guerrero Jr., who is like abundantly available for much less on the open market. And his ceiling is nowhere near Vlad's, but I think that like his floor is relatively similar when you consider the fact that these two players both debuted in 2019 and have both put up 17 Fangraphs WAR since then. Alonso's actually put up 17.3 and Vlad's put up 17. Alonso has a 131 weighted runs created plus for his career. Vlad has a 137 weighted runs created plus, and they have remarkably similar playing time over that, you know, their time in the big leagues since 2019. Alonso 846 games, Vlad 819, remarkably similar walk rates as well. Both have strong contact quality, to your point. Both hit the ball as hard as anybody. Both poor defenders, both poor base runners. Now, Vlad is younger, obviously. He is a better pure overall hitter than Alonso. He has a higher average, a higher on-base percentage. And look, Vlad's going to be going into his age 27 season when he's a free agent, and Alonso's going into his age 30 season. So, like, that makes a difference. Vlad's a better hitter and overall, and he projects better going forward. So he's undoubtedly worth more than Pete Alonso. But Pete Alonso signed for 2 years and $54 million. Is Vlad worth $450 million more than Pete Alonso? I mean, Alonso just got a, what, that's a $27 million AAV?
Right.
Is, like, does Vlad really get $13 million more per year than Alonso?
I think that's fair.
To me, that's a great, I don't see it. For a first baseman, I don't see it.
And I would much rather have Vlad at 40 than Alonso at 27.
Yeah, if it's a binary choice between the two, but you could also have neither and, you know, still have the flexibility to sign even a Christian Walker or a Josh Naylor, you know, or like take your veteran old guy who comes on, that like your Anthony Rizzo types, right? And just kind of cycle through like that and probably get commensurate production while preserving capital to deploy elsewhere and address deficiencies around your roster.
I mean, you got to spend it somewhere. If you're going to be a CBT team, you got to spend it somewhere. And I would rather have the 25, 26, 27 year old than the Justin Turners and the Brandon Belts and even the Pete Alonso's. I'd rather have the guy who's just elite, elite, the best in the world at what he does, and who's in his physical prime, and who can do it year after year for you. So that's where, to me, it's part of the reason I landed on the, hey, this is a good idea side of things, is I think Alonso's interesting because, okay, a guy of his caliber doesn't appear in the free agent market every year. I mean, that's maybe every couple years. And even when he does, I mean, the Blue Jays engaged with Pete Alonso. He chose to go back with the Mets. You know, there's no guarantee that you can actually get Pete Alonso to Toronto. And it didn't become any easier when you let Vlad Jr. go, because there's not exactly like this dynamic core in place that's a lock to be a contender every single year. So that's one part of it. I do think that you can get a Brandon Belt or a Justin Turner every year. I think there's always Carlos Santana. There's always someone in that tier. The mid to late 30s, first baseman, one-year deal, probably projects at a 105, maybe 110 WRC plus, older dude, not going to run the base as well, good clubhouse presence. That dude is always out there for 6 to 12 million, 6 to 20 million per season, let's call it. So you can always do that. But that guy has a way lower offensive floor than Vladdy, and offensive ceiling, I mean, than yes, Vladdy.
Definitely. Definitely a lower offensive ceiling, but perhaps a similar floor.
Perhaps.
And I think that first base in particular, like, is such a quirky position of value. Like, it's so difficult because if you're, you know, 140 WRC plus or better, you're a superstar, right? Like, you're Vlad, you're Bryce, you're Freddie. But if you're closer to like that 120, 125 range in terms of WRC plus, so like a 25% better than league average hitter, well, now you're Pete Alonso or you're Christian Walker or you're like Rhys Hoskins. And there are, you know, vastly disparate values for those two classes of first baseman.
I think this is where, and I want to sort of go back a half step there, because I actually don't think that, say, the Brandon Belt, Justin Turner floor, I think that's actually way lower than Vladdy's floor. I think that their floor is maybe a below average hitter. Vladdy's floor, I mean, my goodness, I'm looking at his Baseball Savant page right now. It is like pure red. And his bat speed is pure red. Like, he is such a good dynamic hitter. This is so rare. Like, if he's healthy, which is a variable for any player, of course, but if Vladdy's healthy, I just have a hard time seeing him producing less than a 120 WRC plus. I really do. And here's a question for you. For the next like decade, I was asking myself this. How many players in baseball can you say, I think he'll be better than Vlad for the next decade? Like any position, it could be center field, could be shortstop. Obviously, you've got your Bobby Witts, your Gunnar Henderson's. Those guys are likely to be better than Vlad. You can toss a Paul Skeens in there. There's some more names. But how many guys do you think are likely to exceed his war for the next decade?
Soto.
Yep.
Julio.
Agreed.
Let's see here. Yordan, maybe.
I would say no.
You'd say yeah. No. Acuna. Shohei.
Two ACLs. You know, I don't know about Acuna, but I'd say he has a good chance. Shohei. Eli De La Cruz. Right. I would put Jackson Churio and Jackson Merrill as yep. candidates. You know, maybe yep. it's an even, you could pick your battle there, but those guys have a shot at it.
Adley, maybe.
Yeah. Maybe Adley.
Kyle Tucker, maybe.
Maybe.
Like, I think Kyle Tucker and Vlad could be neck and neck for the next decade. Perhaps somebody who hasn't debuted yet, right?
Yeah, like Travis Bazana or something, or some dude who's in college now, yeah.
Scooble, would you put him in there? Right,
I wouldn't, but he could.
He could, you know, like Garrett Crochet could. He's 25.
Yeah,
it's tough with pitchers, man. Like it's so much more fraught trying to project a pitcher over 10 years than it is with a position player.
But my point is, it's a pretty short list, and of course, other players will emerge, and you know, someone who's you know we're not even thinking of is going to have a monster decade, and you know, good for them. But
yeah,
I actually don't think it's a long list of players, and. The more I look at Vladdy, like the more he really is a special, special hitter to do what he's doing at this age. I think he's got his best moments, his best years still ahead of him. And so this is where, again, I don't know the numbers, but I just see it as such a missed opportunity to have this guy around, even if you had to pay way beyond your comfort zone. Would you rather he's on the Red Sox? If the Red Sox throw a boatload at him in 8 months' time, I don't think that makes the Blue Jays in a better situation, or even take the AL East out of it, even if he's playing for San Francisco. I don't think that's a great outcome.
But to your point, he is not the only superstar in the game.
Right.
I think we just identified that. And it is possible to build a really good team, even a World Series winner, without Vladimir Guerrero Jr.
Yeah.
Teams have done it every single season of his career.
Yeah.
It turns out you can actually put Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani on the same team in their prime and not even make it to the postseason.
Yep.
In a soft division. So, like, no doubt it'll be more challenging for the Blue Jays to build a contender, especially in the AL East, without Vladimir Guerrero Jr. If he does leave, by the way, I still think there are pathways to him returning. Maybe we'll get to that. But I do think you need superstars to succeed in the AL East. But I also think the Blue Jays have resources, commitment from ownership, an attractive environment that they can use to encourage superstars to join their team. Like, we just look, to my point that I just made, I think Kyle Tucker and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. could be neck and neck in terms of war over the next decade. Like, Kyle Tucker's a superstar. This is a consistent 5 to 6 win player. If the Blue Jays redeploy payroll next year and sign Kyle Tucker and then grab like a Josh Naylor and a Freddie Peralta around him, like, is that a bad outcome? And, you know, if it's that versus Vladimir Guerrero Jr., like, you know, Tucker, Naylor, Peralta, that's like 10 wins right there. That's more than Vlad's going to put up in a best case scenario. And, you know, other really, really good players are going to become available over the next 12 to 18 months. It's not just Tucker, right? Like, it is inevitable in this sport that really, really good players are going to be traded. Really, really good players are going to get to free agency. So, like, if Vlad goes elsewhere via free agency next winter, like, the Blue Jays just have to find another way to acquire an exceptionally talented player. It's a scarce asset, I give you that, but it's not unattainable.
Right. I mean, these guys in trade talks typically are untouchable, and once they get to free agency, the price is really high. And I guess
Juan Soto was traded twice. Garrett Crochet was traded this offseason.
Yeah, they're tough. They're very tough to acquire.
Yordan Alvarez was traded.
Like, yeah, right. I mean, before he was Yordan Alvarez, but he right. was traded.
Mookie Betts was traded. Francisco Lindor was traded.
Yeah. Okay. So you can make a blockbuster trade. It helps if you have a good farm system, which the Blue Jays do not, right?
Fair.
So that's, you know, they're ranked by the public rankings. They're 20 to 30. So
that's a good point.
It's bottom third. So I don't see enough. Like, if it would be different if they're the Red Sox and they can just part with a Kyle Teal and get Crochet, not where they are as an organization, which, you know, that's a whole other podcast. But I think that in free agency, in theory, I agree with you. I do think the Blue Jays sign free agents. I think it's a myth. I don't like the narrative out there that, like, oh, they can't sign anyone. Of course they can sign players. They do sign players. They sign players all the time.
Every year.
But do they sign the best of the best? This is where I don't see it happening. I think they sign guys who are, you know, available for a little bit of a deal, or they like Toronto, or it just kind of works out. But the best of the best, it hasn't happened yet. So it would be a departure if they are able to find a way to do that. When it comes to the elite players of this game, they have not spent at that level. They have not overwhelmed folks with bids. And so I'm not sitting here assuming that Kyle Tucker is going to the Jays. I am really not.
But they have shown a willingness to extend themselves for exceptional players in free agency.
But extend themselves Ohtani. Enough, though? Extend themselves relative to themselves, sure. But relative to the player's expectation, that's what counts.
They offered Corbin Burns more money than Arizona did.
Well, if you really wanted Corbin Burns, though, don't you have to offer him way more because he wants to stay in Arizona? Like, offering a, you know, I don't know what the offer was, but let's say they offer $10 million more. They're not offering enough to get the deals done.
Yeah, that much is clear. The deals have not gotten done. I believe that if they continue to, and like Mark Shapiro alluded to this in his comments on Tuesday, that the Blue Jays were going to keep hammering at you know, the best available players. My belief is that if they continue that, eventually they are going to get one of these players. Like, eventually. And it's, you know, Sasaki put him aside because that's a weird circumstance, but eventually, like, one of these Soto's, Burns's, Ohtani's, you know, the Corey Seager pursuit, the Freddie Freeman pursuit, the, you know, they wanted to talk to Gerrit Cole and couldn't even get to the table. I mean, eventually one of these players is going to come to Toronto.
That's the hope. We'll step aside for a moment here on At the Letters. When we come back, we'll continue to analyze the Vlad Jr. non-deal from various different angles. Listen to At the Letters ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime. All right, we are back on At the Letters, and maybe there's a little bit of hope here for Blue Jays fans. I definitely agree with you, Arden, that you can build a good team without Vladimir Guerrero Jr. If you're the GM of this team, that has to be your purpose. That has to be your mission, to find ways to backfill, to make this team independent of the success of any one player, regardless of how special that player might be. So the Jays will attempt to do that. But you hinted that you actually think there are still some pathways where maybe there could be a reunion or a continued relationship between the Jays and Vlad Jr.
100%. Like, I don't think that this is a definitive end to his tenure in Toronto. I think there are still routes for him to play for the Blue Jays long term. And, like, I think that in this particular situation, and this isn't just this year, like, this is going back honestly over Vlad's entire tenure with the Blue Jays. Like, clearly these two sides have had difficulty aligning on value. You know, we've seen this before. You know, we've seen them require an arbitrator in order to, like, just clarify what that value is. And maybe they require the open market to help them clarify what the actual value is. Like, it, once a player goes to market, it actually becomes a lot easier to arrive at what the value is going to be, because it just is what it is. When you're dealing with a player who's still under team control, like, you're dealing with a lot of hypotheticals and a lot of, well, if this, then that. Once you go to free agency, like, the prior production is just locked in. It just is what it is. You're no longer, you know, projecting for what he's going to do in his final two arbitration years and what that could mean for him when he's a free agent, when you're buying out free agent years. Like, he's a free agent, and the market will tell you. The market becomes like a third party, which offers the fresh perspective that is often needed when two parties are at an impasse. So if Vlad goes to market and you're no longer working with, like, these sort of theoretical values, ultimately it comes down to, okay, here's what Vlad can get from another team. The Blue Jays can either match or exceed that. And if Vladimir Guerrero Jr., as he said, really wants to be in Toronto and really wants to be a Blue Jay for life, he can come back to them. And if they give him an equal or even better offer than he's getting elsewhere, he can be a Blue Jay for life. Like, he can keep going. And the Blue Jays can then see via the market, oh, we have actually undervalued this player. Like, oh, like we, you know, we were wrong. Like, we need to offer him more. Like, that. I just think that the market could be very clarifying for this negotiation.
It could be. And I think that, I mean, that's an optimistic reading of things. And
you know me, man. I'm
yeah, exactly. A
picture of optimism.
Hey, it's that patented Arden Swelling optimism right here on At the Letters. This is exactly what people expect and hope for from this pod. Yeah, I think that with the market, it could help to clarify things. I tend to think that it's an auction for Vlad Jr. at this point. I think at this moment in time, he's hitting free agency, and I think he's signing with the highest bidder. If that's the Blue Jays, I think he's a Blue Jay. If that's the Seattle Mariners, they get their finances together, they bid big, boom, you know, welcome to Seattle. I think it's kind of that simple. I think that's the way it was with Juan Soto. I think Soto was always going to go where the money was. And at this point, and again, I don't know the exact number that the Blue Jays offered, but I think it was big. You know, like, let's put it that way.
Yeah, Vlad didn't come out and say this like process was insulting. I can't believe that's what they thought I was worth, right?
That's right. That's right.
You know, and you would have heard that. If the Blue Jays were lowballing him and just insulting him throughout this, you would have heard that.
I think that's true. I think that would have somehow made its way out there through media back channels, or, you know, the Blue Jays were insulting him.
So clearly they made a reasonable offer, a serious offer, a legitimate offer, and that would have to be substantial. It would have to be very big.
Because we know that when he said they weren't even close at 340, they obviously went up from there. We know it's public record that Edward Rogers was involved in this process. This clearly would have been the biggest contract in Blue Jays history. I think it's very safe to assume that it was over 400, potentially well over 400 million. Again, that's an assumption. I'm not saying I'm sort of reading tea leaves here, but I think it is a safe assumption that they were, you know, offering a massive deal. It's not like they came to him with 175.
No,
you know. So
I think it's safe to say substantially over the 340 offer.
Yeah.
So I mean, that's a ton of money.
Exactly.
Know, like, it's going to be like the third or fourth largest contract in the history of the game.
Exactly. Exactly. So it wasn't an insulting one, and he didn't take it. He didn't take it because when we were talking about this last week, I had kind of speculated maybe Vladdy has told his agent, get as much as you can from the Jays, but I will sign. That clearly wasn't the case. Or I had wondered, maybe ownership says, hey, get the best deal you can, but end of the day, we got to get this done. That wasn't the case either. So actually both sides were willing to step away and say, you know what, this just isn't quite working for us. And this is where we are. And this is where I just don't think there's a hometown discount that's ever going to come. I think he had his chance right here. If he was going to give the Blue Jays a quote unquote hometown discount,
and
this was the chance. No, I'm not saying he should.
No player ever should. No player, you know, Joe Panik shouldn't give hometown discounts to San Francisco, and Vlad shouldn't give hometown discounts to Toronto. No player ever should.
Joe Panik shout out. That's the first mention probably since 2020.
I was like, what's the most mid player I can think of? Who, you know,
yeah.
The example of Vlad is like an elite player, and then the example of Panik is just like a very replaceable player. No one should ever.
There's no hometown discount coming. So I think it's just an auction.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think that going to market and entering that auction ultimately is a good thing, in that it will either make the Blue Jays realize they need to substantially improve their offer, or it will make Vlad's side realize that their expectations are not aligned with reality.
Yeah, and that's possible here, right? Again, I don't know what Vlad Jr.'s ask and expectation was, but it's possible that his valuation of himself is higher than any team would agree to. We know now that it's higher than one team, but then again, the Blue Jays aren't known for splashing out, and they are known for being disciplined. That's the way that they have established under Mark Shapiro.
Sure, but if they were substantially above 340, and say they were above 400, which seems possible here.
Yeah, if not likely.
If not likely, to me, that's really splashy.
It's
third biggest deal in the history of the sport. Like, look, I'm on record, right? Like last week I said, I think a fair value is 402 and a half over 11 years, 402.5 over 11 years. So I gave him like a $36.6 million AAV, 402.5 over the 11 years of free agency with the 28.5 that he's going to be making this year in his final year of ARB. Like, to me, that was fair. Now, we've also heard David Ortiz, who knows Vladimir Guerrero Jr. very well and isn't typically someone who like weighs in on contract values.
Yeah, he's no Carlos Baerga.
That was really good. You know, is not exactly writing Fangraphs articles where he's diving into the projections and, you know, seeing what like, a, you know, offering comps. He comes out and says, yeah, I think Vlad's worth $585 million over 13 years, which is an oddly specific number to just pull out. That's a $45 million AAV, which is remarkable. And look, if there was a way with deferrals to close the gap between, you know, I think around a low 400s is fair. And if Vlad wants 585, okay, let's get the deferrals involved so that you get the sticker price of 585, but, you know, and the sticker price of a $45 million AAV, but actually in net present value, it's 36 and a half or $37 million AAV. And it's actually close, you know, in, you know, NPV, it's actually a low 400 million. Sure, like do that. If that was possible, but it seems like it wasn't in this case. But like that's how big the gap could be. And if it really is the case that Vlad wants over $500 million, over $550 million, if you're the Blue Jays, I think you have to let him go to the market and realize that and see if that's out there. Like I think that would be a wild deal for the Blue Jays to sign Vladimir Guerrero Jr. to today. I think if it comes to that in free agency and that's what it takes, okay, you make a decision then. But to do that today with the uncertainty of this season still coming up, I just cannot imagine a place where rationally you could ink that deal.
Yeah, I mean, you said you have to let him walk if the ask is, you know, above 550 in that territory.
I think so, yeah.
I don't know that you have to. Like, you could also just sign the deal and hope for the best. You know,
like, it's almost a certainty that that is not going to end up a good contract.
The last years of that contract wouldn't be good. But if you have Vlad Jr. for the next 6, 7, 8 years of his prime up until he's, you know, let's say he's a really, really good hitter until he's 33, which is, I mean, 33 is not that old. Freddie Freeman signed his deal at 32. So, you know, if he's a really, really good hitter for the next 6, 7, 8 years, who knows how many ALCS appearances or World Series appearances you make. I mean, it's certainly a lot easier. And there are other ways to get WAR onto the roster, but this is one of them. And this is one way to get that WAR into one roster spot where it's consolidated and it gives you other roster spots to play around with and have an extra defender on the bench or have an extra, you know, bench bat for late in games. There is value in having that WAR in one roster spot. That's part of the reason that superstars are valued the way they are.
And I would be a lot more confident saying that Vlad was going to be like a 5 or 6 win player every single season until 33, 34, if I had seen that consistency from him prior. But we've only seen 2 seasons in which he's had 5 or more wins, 2021 and 2024. And those seasons sandwiched 2 seasons where he was merely a very good first baseman. I would be more willing to bet on Kyle Tucker being a consistent 5-win player until he's 33, 34 than I would be on Vladimir Guerrero Jr. based purely on the track record and the history of their results.
In a sense, that's almost punishing Vladdy for making it to the major league so young.
Kyle Tucker got up at 21. He wasn't exactly a vet.
I mean, I think Kyle Tucker is great too. I'm not trying to throw shade at Kyle Tucker right here, but yeah. I think that for Vlad Jr., when you look at, and I don't have it in front of me, but when you look at the history of the game and just, you know, how young he has been to do this, like Aaron Judge as one comp, through the same age, Vlad Jr. has more home runs than Aaron Judge. You know how many more home runs? 104. Like, and
right,
this
but when did Aaron Judge reach the majors?
Well, that's my point. Is like Aaron Judge, we don't throw shade at Aaron Judge because he was playing for, you know, Scranton Wilkes-Barre and you know, hitting 20 homers at AAA, we just kind of overlooked that. Vladdy was doing that against the best pitchers in the world. And yeah, the results weren't great, but they were still very good. And when you look at him compared to players, you know, up to this point in their careers, he's not Miguel Cabrera. He's not Albert Pujols. You know, he's as we said last week, he's not Willie Mays. This is not one of the best players of all time. There are better players, but he's really, really good. And so if they had signed him for $550, maybe some deferrals tossed in there, I honestly would be sitting here and saying, you know what? Good job by the Jays.
But when Aaron Judge was 25, he hit 52 homers and had an 8.7 win season. When Vladimir Guerrero Jr. was 25, he hit 30 homers and had a 5.5 win season. So we're talking about like 22 fewer homers, and we're talking about three fewer wins above replacement. So if Aaron Judge is a $40 million AAV player, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is not a $45 million AAV player.
I tend to agree. I think, look, Big Poppy, if you're listening to this, like, dial down that AAV. I think 40 is more appropriate for Vlad Jr. The years is where it maybe gets interesting, right? Because I suggested, I think my initial suggestion was 10 free agent years. Clearly, that wouldn't have gotten it done. And I did say last week, hey, there's room to go up. But the question is how far? And Soto got 15. Did Vlad want 13 or 14? Again, we're speculating here because we don't know. This information hasn't been out there. But 13 times 40 is 520. 14 times 40 is 560. So those numbers start getting really big really fast. But yeah, it's interesting to look at it from all these angles.
I think it's very easy as well to just kind of fall into a bit of recency bias here. And I know I've made this point before, but like, he is coming off of like an MVP caliber campaign, like just a sensational year. But 2023 was 118 weighted runs created plus. Like, that wasn't that long ago. And, you know, guys like Ryan Noda had better seasons that year. Wilmer Flores had a better season that year. This is just true, man. It's more distant in our memory, but it happened less than 24 months ago. So there's just no guarantee that he is going to be as good in 25, 26, 27, 28 as he was in 24. He's a better bet than most. Like, his upside is much higher than most. His ceiling is much higher than most. But if he goes out and he's merely 125 WRC plus, again, that's a really good hitter. Like, that's 25% better than league average. But if he does that at first base this upcoming season, he forget $40 million, forget $35 million AAV. If he goes out and he's a 125 WRC plus guy, he's looking at a Pete Alonso pillow contract.
I think his floor is still pretty high. I mean, I think Vladdy's floor would still be kind of like, you know, maybe it's Bregman plus. Like, is it 140 over three with opt-outs after 2 years? You know, each
well,
year.
Are you considering Bregman as a $30 million AAV or a 40? Because it's 30 NPV.
Right. Right. Yeah. So you know, I mean, clearly teams would prefer Vladdy to Bregman.
So then maybe Vladdy's 32. You know, 32 and a half AAV on a 3 year deal.
I think his floor is higher than that.
If he has a 125 weighted runs created plus year, if he's merely very good, I don't know. Like this is the thing with what Vlad's doing right now, man. Like, he is inheriting a ton of pressure. Like, yes. We have to look at this from his perspective.
Yeah, let's do that
as well. Like, he's making a very big bet on himself. And like, Aaron Judge is like a good example here of a guy who turned down an extension, bet on himself, and then went out and had like the season of all seasons, right? Like, his platform year was incredible. But we've also talked about Pete Alonso here. How do you think he feels about turning down the extension offer that he had with the Mets and then going out and having the platform year that he had, you know? And you can look at, like, not everybody who bets on themselves profits, like Michael Conforto, Joey Gallo. Like, there are multiple examples of guys who turned down extensions and did not have good platform years and lost money for it. Like, not like Aaron Judge is like the prime example of when it goes right.
Soto,
it doesn't always
even score. Better.
So yeah. Soto's another good one. So we're talking about like the elite of the elite of the elite, like the best of the best hitters in this game. There's just so much pressure now on Vlad to have a huge platform year, you know, because look, like, the Blue Jays in this, they are maintaining the ability to meet his demands at any time. They still have the ability to like beat any offer he gets on the open market.
Like they can come back to him at the All-Star break at the end of spring training, like we've said, and loop back and get a deal done. Like they haven't sacrificed that. But what Vlad needs to do now is have another elite season. He like that's what he needs to do to realize the value that he believes he's worth. If it's 13,585 or if it's 12,520, whatever it is. And he's certainly capable of another elite season, but he's also capable of a so-so season. We've seen both within the last two seasons. And this is baseball. A lot happens over 6 months, man. Guys get hit by pitches in the wrists and guys tweak their hamstrings. Guys go through weird months of bad batted ball luck and their BABIP is like 220 and, you know, everything is hit directly at a guy. I just, there are a lot of ways that this could play out poorly for Vlad over the next 6 to 8 months. There's a way that it could play out very well for him. But he's taken on a ton of risk and a ton of pressure in making this decision.
Yeah. And I do think, like, you know, when our discussion has focused on the Jays, and I don't like how this played out for the Jays. I don't. I think that they've missed opportunities here. Don't like it. At the same time, if the Blue Jays offer was, if it was 440 or over, like if it beat Shohei Ohtani's net present value, then I actually think Vladdy should have taken the offer.
I agree.
Like I, and if I was his agent, I would have told him, I think you should take this offer. Obviously it's your call. You're the one in charge. You can do what you want to do, but I think you should take this offer. And I think that if the Blue Jays offer was over 440, he should have taken it. And I think it was a mistake not to, if he didn't take it. Now it might pay off and there might be reward over and above that by $100 million. And as we've said before, Vlad Jr. is fine financially. He's made $70 million in his career. He's not worried about his visa statement. So that's you know, good for him. But I still think that you're right. He did take on a huge amount of risk. There is a huge amount of variance to come here. But hey, if any player's going to do it, honestly, I think that Vladdy is on the short list of players who I think is actually a pretty decent bet to have like a 140 WRC plus. And, you know, in fact, when I look at this game, there aren't a lot of hitters who I think are going to be better than Vlad this coming season.
Well, and he's uniquely positioned to bet on himself, having like $70 million in career earnings already. You know, like the majority of MLB players, they don't make half of that. And also his father made a ton of money in this game and youth is on his side. So like if he goes out and gets injured or underperforms, like, you know, we're depicting the Pete Alonso pillow contract as some sort of like terrible situation. I mean, that's still $27 million next year, right? Like if he has to, oh no, right? And re-entering free agency at 28 or 29, having, you know, just pushed his career earnings up close to $100 million, like he'll still have paths to realize a whole ton of value. But yeah, there is like, there's something to be said for the certainty of those like $430, $440 million today, if that was on the table. And like, to me, that's even, you know, that's beyond where I would have gone. Like I said, 402.5 over 11 is where I would have gone. But yeah, if that like 440, 450 was there on the table, I absolutely would have advised him to take it for all of the reasons that I said prior, like all of the ways that this season could go poorly for him in terms of performance or health. And also the fact that like this is now putting a lot of faith in Vlad's market next year being robust. Pete Alonso thought he was going to have a robust market this winter. Like he did not come into this winter. He did not turn down that extension and come into this winter thinking that he was going to take a pillow contract. Like he thought that he was going to get paid. And each market is distinct. You know, like, so next winter, it could be that Vlad has like five really wealthy, well-resourced teams bidding on him. And that would be like perfect world scenario, right? Like he could have the Soto market where he's got, you know, the most wealthy owners in the game, many of them acting emotionally, bidding on him. Like that's how you end up with the absurd deal that Soto got. But like, you have to also allow for the possibility that Steve Cohen and David Stearns, who right now are, you know, talking publicly about how cautious they have to be after spending that money on Soto, look at Vlad and say, yeah, we're not actually willing to extend ourselves to this point. Like Steve Cohen said yesterday when asked directly about Vlad, yeah, I'm going to leave that to my baseball people. So, like, do you think David Stearns is the kind of guy who just, like, spends money without considering valuations and projections and being disciplined? He goes to that school. Same with Craig Breslow. Like, Craig Breslow's, like, first in his class at the Shapiro Atkins School of Value Focused Management, you know? Yeah. Like, that. Look at his record in free agency. Like, he, you know, aside from Bregman, who, like, the sticker price of that deal isn't actually what the deal's worth in NPV, like, heavily deferred deal, aside from that, like, Craig Breslow isn't somebody who splashed around money in free agency. Houston's really hesitant to spend in free agency. The Dodgers and Phillies have cornerstone first basemen. I mean, it's a big assumption, and it's a big bet by Vlad that his market is going to be as robust next year as Soto's was if he wants a value approaching Soto's.
Yeah, it's a big bet on himself. He has to deliver.
It's a big bet on things out of his control as well, would be my point.
I think to some extent that's true because there's economic uncertainty as far as, you know, different teams' TV structures and, you know, the state of even things beyond baseball. But I think that elite players, premium players, when they hit the market, there's so much demand for them because they're so different. And I think that if Vlad Jr., like, I'm looking at the projections on Fangraphs right now for 2025, sorting by WRC+, and you have Judge, Yordan Alvarez, Juan Soto, Shohei Ohtani, Acuna Jr., Brent Rooker, Vlad Jr. Then it's Mike Trout, Bryce Harper. So that's the tier of hitter he's in. Each one of those guys, with the exception of Brent Rooker, who's both older and in Oakland and just a DH, but each one of those guys, you put them on the open market, man, there is a lot of demand. And the demand varies to some degree for each player. Like, Harper hit the market at kind of a down time. He didn't really get that mega deal. Soto hit the market at the perfect time. He cashed in. So there is some variance. And I'm not saying that anything is locked in, but I do think that Vladdy is uniquely capable of having a monster season. And if he does, I think the bidders will be there for him.
I think that if there was a more proven track record of, like, bat first, or bat only, really, first baseman being signed for like a dozen years and $500 million, like, I would be like, yeah, okay. But we, like, teams that operate rationally don't make deals like that.
I just don't think his position matters. I think his age matters way more than, I mean, position matters, of course, but I think his age matters more than his position by far.
Sure, but I just, like, we haven't seen 25, 26-year-old first baseman hit the open market either.
I think in today's game, you just don't see 25, 26-year-old first baseman. You know, normally yeah. That's a position you use for some older dudes to cycle through.
And
so
maybe that says something
about the
long-term projectability of the player, Ben. That case could work against your argument just as much as it could work for it.
I think, like, again, if Vladdy hit like this and was a shortstop and was 25, well, that's A-Rod. Yeah, that's A-Rod, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And A-Rod shattered the market with his deal. So Vladdy is not A-Rod. He will not shatter the market. He will not surpass Soto. But he is still, to hit the way he hits at his age, he's still a special player. Mind you, hey, if 440 was on the table, I still would have said take it. But I think he's in a good position to do. I mean, this is not a hot take. He's a 25-year-old who's a, you know, months away from free agency. He's in a good position.
I like it. It is fascinating. Like, I love the outcome as a neutral observer, like, as somebody who isn't emotionally invested in any of this, because it's going to be so interesting to see what kind of a season he has. If we do learn some of the figures and some of the information in this negotiation at some point, that's going to be fascinating. And, like, honestly, like, that's going to shape my opinion more than anything, is just, like, where were the Blue Jays? Where was Vlad's side? How much did they move? That's like, with absent that information, like, it's very hard to make a judgment. So if we learn any of that, it's fascinating. If Vlad goes out and has a tremendous year, it's fascinating. If he goes out and has a poor year, it's fascinating, because where does he go from there? If the Blue Jays are really good or really bad or completely mid and get to the trade deadline, their decision with Vlad is fascinating in any of those scenarios. And then next, like, winter's free agent market with Vlad on it is going to be fascinating, because, like, hey man, if I'd love to be wrong. Like, if the market values him as a slugging bat only first baseman, like, if it values him in the same way that it does other player profiles, like, wicked. If he goes out, gets $500 million, that's so cool. That's so interesting. Sign me up for, like, honestly, any of these possible storylines, like, any of these realities that could play out. It's just, it's super, super fascinating.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. And I want to touch on this trade possibility before we step away here for the week. But I agree with the way you laid it out. If the Jays are good, they obviously aren't trading him. But if they're bad, they pretty much have to shop him. And if they're in between, you know, 48 and 52, they probably need to be open to offers there and at least consider what the market has to say about the value of this player. So that's the situation where an extension, that takes that off the table. An extension, he's here, you're building around him. Now, you know, for the clubhouse, for the players in that room, you know, there's kind of more uncertainty here. And certainly for those of us in the media, it's going to be a big talking point all year. I think that it should be. I think that's a right, you know, decision to talk about that stuff. And I'm sure we'll be talking about it a lot, because the trade deadline now takes on added meaning.
Yeah, and especially in an American League environment where, like, who are the uncompetitive teams? The White Sox, the Angels, and the Athletics. Aside from them, you've got, like, what do you got there? Like 11 teams, 12 teams that could all be playoff teams, honestly.
I mean, the A's are not that bad. I kind of think the Royals might be bad, but I think the A's might be okay.
So if you put the A's in there, that's 12 teams for 6 playoff spots. Like, and it's just like, it's such a mid off in the American League, right? Like, maybe you put the Yankees on a higher tier, but of, like, Red Sox, Orioles, Blue Jays, Rays, Twins, Tigers, Royals, Guardians, Rangers, Mariners, Astros, Athletics. Do any of those teams really separate themselves?
Orioles and Red Sox, I think, are both very, very good.
Right. So perhaps the, you know, Yankees, Red Sox, Orioles are kind of the upper crust of the American League. And then you've got one winner of the Central and one winner of the West. And then the Blue Jays are competing with Rays and whoever's left over from the Central and West. Like, I could very much see a possible, my point here is, like, I could very much see a scenario where it's the trade deadline and the Blue Jays are one of, like, 6 or 7 teams all bunched in a wild card race separated by, like, 5 games.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's where the decision gets so interesting.
I think they would hold in that situation.
I think it depends on the context of how they got to that position, and the nuance of, like, who's healthy, who's been producing, who hasn't, have we benefited from luck, you know, what's our run differential, all these things. Like, I think all of that will play into it. How are other teams positioned? What's our schedule look like versus theirs? And oh, by the way, like, yeah, the Tigers just showed us that you can actually sell at the deadline and still fall into the playoffs. So I don't know. Maybe Blue Jays should sell because they might just find their way into the postseason like the Tigers did. But, like, I just, that's where the decision gets so interesting, because, like, a really bad case scenario is buying at the deadline or doing, like, a soft buy or a hold at the deadline, whatever you do, and then missing the postseason and watching Vladimir Guerrero Jr. sign with the Red Sox and Bo Bichette sign with the Dodgers, and all you're getting back are a couple of second round picks.
Yeah,
that's terrible outcome.
Maybe they need to follow that Tigers model, trade him at the deadline, make the playoffs anyway, just like they did with Jack Flaherty, and then re-sign him. That's the chess move. Then he's a Blue Jay, just as a little blip on his baseball reference page is all Blue Jays, except for like 2 months with the A's at the end of the season. But no, I don't think, I'm just joking. I don't know exactly how this is going to play out. And we'll see. It's going to be high stakes for the Jays, high stakes for Vladdy. Arden, is there anything else you want to get to before we step away here?
You know, I would like the Flaherty scenario was a facetious one, but like we've talked about Judge a lot as a comp here. You know, Aaron Judge went into his walk year without a deal, and then he had a tremendous platform year, and the Yankees re-signed him. That's a possibility here. Like, we have to allow that, like, Vlad could go out and post this year and rake and have a great year, and then the Blue Jays say, okay, like, you proved it. What's your market value? We'll match it or we'll exceed it. Like, it's entirely possible that he plays out this year as a Blue Jay and then re-signs with the Blue Jays in free agency.
It is possible. It is possible. One thing that the Yankees have when it comes to retaining their players, and they've done this really well over the course of the last 30 plus years, from Derek Jeter all the way to Aaron Judge, is they've been competitive. They've been a playoff team year after year. And Vladdy says he wants to win. I think one way to improve your chances is to have a really good season. I actually personally think that both Bo and Vladdy are going to have monster years at the plate, and that should go a long way toward keeping the team competitive. And maybe you end up in a little bit of a virtuous cycle, but I'm not assuming anything at this point when it comes to what happens next year.
Well, and the other thing is, if Vlad is able to get a $500 million deal in free agency, that means he had a great walk year. And yep. That means the Blue Jays were probably at least pretty decent, if not just good, because they had Vladimir Guerrero Jr. having a monster year.
Yeah. The goal in all of this is to win games. The goal is not to marry one specific player and to put, you know, that relationship with that player above anything else. The Blue Jays need to win games. Recently, they have fallen very short of that goal. We'll see if they can get closer to it. But the reason we're talking about this is Vlad Jr. is a player who can help teams win games. And that is the goal in all of this.
And I also don't think that not re-signing Vladimir Guerrero Jr. means anyone should be fired. Like, I think the Blue Jays are where they are because of a poor record of drafting and developing, and a bit of a bad bet in Dalton Varsho continuing to improve offensively, and George Springer's decline being steeper and earlier than expected, and Vlad spending like two seasons being less than a superstar, and Alejandro Kirk not taking the offensive strides that every projection model keeps predicting him to, and the 2024 bullpen being like -2.5 F4 group, you know, one of like the three worst bullpens of the last decade. Like, fire people for all of those reasons. But sure. I really do think that, like, in this negotiation, the Blue Jays made, and again, this is just my opinion. I don't know this for a fact because I wasn't in the room, but just reading the tea leaves in the situation, I think the Blue Jays actually made a really strong effort to extend Vladimir Guerrero Jr.
Yeah, and if Vladdy wanted a huge, huge number and they walked away from that, I don't think that would be a fireable offense. I still think the biggest strike against this Blue Jays front office is they haven't drafted and developed enough. And
100%.
And specifically on the pitching side. So I think that's the biggest issue. You know, we can talk about Miles Straw. We can talk about this extension. I still think with this, they have had chances over the years. So whether we're talking about Monday specifically, they've had chances over the years to extend Vlad Jr. To not do that is, in my opinion, a miss. But, you know, that's why we're here talking about it.
And this year, the Blue Jays have someone else running their draft. It's no longer Shane Farrell. It's Mark Tremuda. And they have realigned their pitching development. Like, they, for the first time in their history, like, have somebody who's like leading pitching development within that department. And they are going to, you know, they've talked about doing things differently, like Joe Sclafani and Ross Atkins. And, you know, plenty of people at the Blue Jays have talked about the over-reliance on developing stuff and pure metrics, and how Blue Jays need to be better at teaching pitchability and, you know, just producing big league capable starters, because they admit that their track record is not strong in that regard. So they've made changes in those areas. And if those changes continue to not bear fruit, then you absolutely need to look at the people who are putting, like, who are above that. And that is like the highest of the high in the front office. And I agree with you. Like, the real indictment of this front office is poor drafting, poor development. Like, you don't need to go any further than that. You don't need to talk about, you know, how they speak publicly and message things. Like, you don't need to talk about the Miles Straws.
That's a topic for another day.
You can, but like, I feel like everybody just reaches for these ridiculous reasons to want to indict the front office when really there's just a very obvious reason just staring everyone in the face.
Yes. And you need to have better results than a farm system that's ranked 23rd, 24th in the sport. Not providing enough pitching depth as injuries continue to pop up. We'll talk about Adam Macko and Bo Bichette and everything else with spring training sometime soon. So we'll keep you posted as spring training gets underway and develops in spring training with Vlad and everybody else there. Arden, I know you're heading down soon. I'll be down there soon as well. So we'll have lots to kind of pick up on and discuss. But in the meantime, thank you for your insights on this week's pod. Thanks to Christian Ryan and Nick Andrade for producing it. And thanks, as always, to everyone listening. We appreciate your time spent here with us on the podcast, and we look forward to more conversations soon on At the Letters.